Okay, so we were talking about when you met this other girl who was at the office with you at the very same time when you needed help to bypass the social security number requirement to apply to university. And were you applying to Cal States or to UC? Do you remember?
I think I had already learned that I could not afford anything else, and that I was going to do this, and I was going to go to Cal State because Cal State is close by, and I had limited resources. So I didn't look into anything else. From the moment I started at ELAC, I knew that's where I'm going to go because that's what I can afford. My family, again, I'm going to keep bringing up money, but my family didn't have it, so it
Right,
wasn't
no.
like I could say, I don't know, mom, help me out with whatever.
Right. So
Was
then, what did this girl tell you? What's the story there? What happened that day?
I told her, I said, I don't have a social security number. Like, very, I was ashamed. I recall that moment now. I was, and I said it very quietly so that no one else
Right. You don't know who's
hears.
watching, who's listening,
Yeah.
true.
And she was like, oh, okay, no, don't worry. Like, she, like, type in the zeros, because I think all you needed to do was do zeros. Like, they had already programmed it so that it would let you in. And
But you
then
didn't know these, right?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Right.
And she was actually transferring out to maybe like a UC or some kind, a better school. Not a better school, I wouldn't want to say that. She had the opportunity to represent in a different space, and I think she took it. And I admire that about
Right.
her. In fact, every time I meet someone and they have the resources to do it, because it takes resources, I want them
Right.
to do it, especially, if they're female, because, we're on the
Right.
internet
Yes.
and so forth. But she was the one who said, where are you going? And I said, well, Cal State LA. And she asked me the same question, where else are you applying? And I said, no, just Cal State LA. I'm going there. And she said, okay, when are you starting? I said, well, in the summer. And she handed me what I still have, by the way, and I will probably send you guys a picture.
Please,
Yeah,
yes.
she handed me a AB540 little flyer thing, like super small. And it had this image of a boy or a girl, I don't know what it was, trying to go through a door, and there was a giant hand on the door, like stopping the boy right here on his face. And it said, have you ever felt this way? And I was like, yeah, right now, So, and
Right.
it said like something like AB540, if you want to know more, like meet at Dolcini's, which I had no idea what Dolcini's was,
Right.
right, until I got to Castle and I realized it's a coffee place. And it had a number, and it was Jose Beltran's number, who you've heard about. So I call Jose, and I said, hey, this is Elizabeth. Like, I'm coming here, and I've been like encouraged to meet you. And I didn't know who Jose was. I didn't know
Right.
he was a peer, I thought maybe he was a teacher or something. I don't know. So I called him, and he was very responsive, and he said, yeah, why don't we meet at the Golden Eagle? And I was like, what is the Golden Eagle?
Right.
Later I found out it was that statue right by the student store. I met him there, and he just told me, like, look, there's a group of students here that are undocumented as well. Not all of them are transfer students, but some of them are, and we're having these meetings to see if we can form a group, like a club here on campus that can provide more resources, that so that we can also bring awareness to the campus about our population and our needs, and also create a support group. So I was like, okay. So I think I met with like him and five others, people that you've mentioned, not Joanna Hinojosa because she came a lot after, but George and Erica, a few others, Fermin, and a few others. And I just sat there. I was more of a observer than active, to be honest, because I didn't know much about it. So we sat there at Dolcini's, and I saw them in exchanging words, like they knew what they were talking about, and they like they had experience in this thing. To be honest, I don't know their backgrounds. Like, I don't know if Jose had been active before in like in high school in some group or something, but he seemed to know what he was doing, and he seemed to be very passionate about helping people like me who had no clue, just be able to communicate my needs to like financial aid or admissions, you know, like to tell them who I was and what I needed, or the advisors. So I just listened, and this might have happened repeatedly for week after week in the summer, but that was it. Like I wasn't, I don't think I was buddy buddy with them yet. Like, to me, it was all very strange.
Because you never, this was the first time you encounter a group of undocumented students
Yes.
trying to organize, right?
Yeah, we were just at a table at outside in Nochini's. Now it's not there anymore, I think.
Inside.
Yeah, but we were there. We were just sitting there, and they had these conversations about things that I wasn't really understanding. Like, they were saying words like liaison and I don't know, petitions and the bylaws and whatever else that,
What was going through your head when through your mind when you observed this group of students having all these conversations?
I think I felt that we were different, because growing up, I don't think I had too many, like my friends at school didn't talk about things like this. And within my family, everybody was just so busy with their roles that no one really spoke about. Like, I wish my parents would have sat with me and said, you know what, like, this is what your life's gonna look like until we take care of this, need of getting legalized and all that. Like, none of that talk ever happened. It was just like, go to school, Mija, because it's good. You gotta go to school. You have to do your work and be someone in life. But to be someone in life, I needed something.
They
Yeah,
forgot to mention
I
that,
forgot to mention that. So when I saw them, Jorge and everybody else is very much into their roots, like their Hispanic Latino roots, like the music and the way they express themselves, because they're not in a structured setting there. It was just a bunch of us just hanging out, talking about big ideas. I was listening. But even that, it was like a culture clash. And I was completely alone because my good friend had already moved. Like, the guy that I told you from ELAC, he had moved to Las Vegas. He was going to go to UNLV, and Mariana had she was gone. Like, she went to UCLA, and the other girl whose name was Cora, she oh whose name is Cora, she also left. Like, she went somewhere else to another university. So what little interactions I had with them, it was nothing to what I was seeing with these people here, like being so close bonded and cheerful, and they were full of life. And I had no friends, so I used every minute that I had with them, because when I was with them, I felt good. Like, I felt like part of something. And I think mainly at the beginning, that's what drew me to them, like their energy and the feeling that, oh, wait a minute, like they're like me. They are like me, and I fit here. Yeah. And so I got to know their ways. Aside from the organizing, we all started bonding in a way that nothing has interfered with. Like, we are still there. Like, if anybody needs a ride to LAX, if they call me, I will go, no matter how late
Ah,
it
that's
was.
lovely.
Yeah, like, we're still there. Like, my wedding, like anything that's important and that we reach out to, we're there. So that's new. That was a brand new concept to me. To me, they are my family. Yeah.
It sounds like they you all form really tight bonds. I heard that overall the interviews with everyone. So I believe that. It sounds like it, and I believe it. So you mentioned that you had like a culture crash.
Yeah.
Why was that?
think, you know, going to Roosevelt, I was surrounded by Hispanic kids and in elementary too, middle school too. But I don't think I think I was like one of those kids that had like one good friend and that was it. And so getting older, I had like one good friend, and that one good friend, we weren't really exposed to, like, you know, now I love cumbias and I love you know, going to tacos and all that good stuff. But having that one good friend, I think we were more about cheeseburgers and fries, you know, we were more about like, I don't know, Blink 182 and Green Day or whatever, you know. And so Ashford, my Iranian friend in ELAC, like he was all my friend, like just him. Like every time I get out of class, I would talk to him, and he didn't talk about anything else than, you know, like his mom's real estate business and maybe him going to lunch with his dad on the weekends, things like that. So our conversations weren't about anything really. Or so we talked about school, like, you know, what class are you taking, things like that. And then I had another friend named Michael. Michael was Korean, and so he, again, like we didn't talk about things like that. He talked about his culture. He used to work at the clothing store. That's how we became friends. So we talked about like movies and shows and things like that, but nothing beyond that. And when I started meeting Jorge and Joanna, and there's another Joanna, I don't know if they told you. I don't remember her last name now.
Espinosa.
Espinosa, there you go. Yeah, they were like, you know, Spanish this and Spanish that, and just, so I think that was the clash that I was like, okay, what's happening here, you know? Like they have a lot to offer. And if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of them had ties back to Mexico. Like they did. I didn't. So my family is here, and that's all that we had, just whoever's here. Like nobody traveled back. We didn't keep communication with anybody over there. Nothing like that. So I think that's what it was. And I still thank them to this moment for helping me become me, you know, like accepting my language, accepting my music, accepting, you know, and getting to know me as a Latina woman.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting, right? So I think that maybe the way you were bonding with these other people was not really to the intimate level, right?
Yeah, I think it was very, very superficial.
I mean, it sounds like it because you couldn't, if I feel like if you're not able to tell them your real problems, like, hey, I'm undocumented, how in the world am I gonna afford to go to college or these kind of things? I guess that is lacking that intimate feeling,
Yeah, and
right?
I think for any of us to succeed, I think that played a very pivotal role.
Right. Yes, I totally agree with that. Yes. So you were meeting with these people who are throwing ideas back and forward across the table. And what were your impressions? Do you think were crazy or something? What were
I
your
think I felt,
impressions?
you know how I told you at the beginning of our story, of my story, was that that this boy who sort of mesmerized me, right? Like he impressed me with the way he carried himself and the way he was talking about school and the way, like his vocabulary. I think that's what I was feeling. I think I was starting to understand that we're not just youth, you know, like young adults, that we have power. Especially in a moment that I felt that maybe I didn't, you know, for because I didn't have a social, so therefore, and the bank had just denied my money. So now I'm starting to see, like, okay, well, these people are coming from somewhere and they seem to have power. You know, they know where they're going. Like, if I'm gonna, I don't think I was strategic to think I need them to make it. I think I just felt like, okay, I think I need that. Whatever it is that they have, I might need that.
Interesting. Do you
It was
mind
impressive.
naming that? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I said it was impressive. It was impressive. As I'm talking about it, I'm thinking about Fermín. So Fermín comes from a long way of like being an activist.
Yes.
I was
Yes.
completely oblivious to any of it before I met them. Like I didn't know, stories have power, and it sounds all cliche now, but that wasn't something I was thinking. Like I didn't know. Even that person, whoever it was that helped me at ELAC to get through, EOP system and get some support through EOP, it didn't click in my mind, like, oh, if I say this to someone else, or if I confide, if I seek help, help is gonna come. Like that was not something. To me, it was like, oh, thank the Lord that this worked. Let's keep going. And then, but again, it's because your mind is busy. Your mind is busy and going to get that money and like sleeping and doing work and and then dealing with your family and whatever drama is happening in your family.
Yeah, that's true, and I totally agree with that. Yes, thank you for sharing that. So you met them in the summer of 2007, and then fall comes, and what happens during fall?
Fall comes and now we have a room. Like we have an actual room for our meetings. And to me, coming from where I was coming from, I had already formed a close bond with several of them. But again, to me, it was still like I'm feeding off their energy. These people are very happy and they're very positive. My mom and dad were constantly at odds with each other. And that had a lot to do, now that I look back on it, because of that, I felt like, oh, these people are peaceful and they're driven, and I want to be there. Still not really understanding what it was, but I remember some of them saying like, oh, we have a room, and it was something really to be excited about. And to have a room at Cal State LA, I think to me was power, because we were meeting outside of Dochinis, and now for someone to give us access to a room, like I thought that was just for like teachers and professors, like adults, So I think that alone speaks to power. Like as a student, you have power, and you can drive your own life, right? So I looked forward to it. Every time there was between classes, so there was a meeting, I looked forward to it and I wanted to be there. And they started talking about, how you were going to roll out the bylaws of the organization and what to name it, and we just got caught up in all those things, what our logo was going to be like, and I started feeling like part of a team. Like everybody was voting and bringing up ideas, and we were being silly. Like I don't know. It's a phoenix, I think. For Suhe is a phoenix, but I remember being like, "Let it be a chicken," because I was being people were silly. Like people were like, "Oh, it may be a donkey," and we were just being silly, and I think that felt so comfortable to not feel restricted. It was like our own space, our own jokes. But it was leading to somewhere big. So I attended all those meetings, and then one day I don't remember why I was with Jose Beltran, and we ended up going to Teixeira's office, who was our became the advisor of the group. And we went into his office, and I sat there, and I think it was the first time that I saw someone in power, right, to level with someone who I believe had no power, but I was starting to see how they came together to collaborate. It was a collaborative effort. And Teixeira was very down to earth, and he like sat with us like we were peers. And he said, I remember he said if we wanted to create change, we needed to be the face of the movement as students. And I was like, okay, but we're just kids. Like we're in school. And he started talking about his background, and I remember him talking about the Chicano movement, I think. Him and a few others, like David Sandoval, and other people that came into our lives later, that they had all served, and they were all leading that movement. And he was like, you guys as educated, law-abiding citizens, you need to be the face of this, like, not me, it's you guys, and let me be, your guidance. Like, use me to facilitate what you guys think is best for it, and he just sympathized. He sympathized a lot. I think I always saw him like, like dad, right? More than an advisor. But yeah, we were there, and that's how I started. And then I understood, like, okay, we're not alone. And Tejeda brought up David Sandoval, who was the director of EOP at that time at Cal State LA. Luz Borjon, I think, was also in the conversation. She must have had a different job because she wasn't as involved as she became later on. But yeah, I think just knowing that we had support, I felt like Cal State LA became my home, like, my mini city where it was safe, and I had power, and I was doing something to become that someone, right? That mom kept saying, become someone. Now it was tangible, like, it was real, and I knew who I was now, and after fall, it grew and grew. We recruited people. And by, I don't know, I think it was like the end of fall, beginning, we had a good solid number of people, and that was empowering, to know there's more of me. It's not just me.
Okay, so there was a lot there. So let me see. You'll get the access to having your meetings in a room. Do you remember what was your role? Were there different the was the organization divided in different roles or the membership, or how did that work?
I think at the beginning we were all learning. So it was a group effort to come up with, again, like, the name, to come up with the colors, to come up with, I guess we wanted, like, a slogan, to come up with who was going to facilitate the meeting. We were still understanding. It wasn't until a lot later that we realized that we needed positions. The school wanted to know more about it. I guess every club was required to have, like, a treasurer, and have, like, a historian, and have, so we learned about that process there as a group. And Jose and Jorge might have been the ones, and Joanna Espinosa might have been the ones talking to student, I don't even know what they call it anymore, ASI. Right, like, the,
Something's cool.
yeah, so I think they were the ones attending those meetings and learning how to run the meeting. And so with time, yeah, we started talking about, like, okay, like, who would like to be, president, and who would like to be VP, and what do those roles entail, like, weekly meetings with Tasheda, and seeking, relationships with other clubs, like, brainstorming all these ideas to become well established, but also we wanted to change things on campus. I'm gonna retract a little bit, but when I first started at Cal State LA, I remember the same experience walking into admissions office, and they wanted to know what I needed, and I had to go way back and say, in 2001, AB 540 was passed, and these are sort of like, these are my rights, right? Like, tell me what to do to enroll, or, like, tell me what to do to, I don't even know what it was, but everywhere I went, I remember it was just insane. And to me, it was a little demeaning, because, again, I was still making sense of who I was in the spectrum of things. And so to go to every office and say, like, I'm undocumented, and I wasn't comfortable with that yet. But I had to say it, I don't have a social security, this is what that means. Like, And that was the meaning. And I think everybody will agree to that. And we knew we had to change that. It was like, okay, at the Sheda, I think that was the first thing we told them. Like, it's not okay. Like, the university should know that we're here, and they should have a process in place, and we shouldn't have to define. We're not AB 540. Like, I'm Elizabeth, And he's not AB 540. Like, that's Jose. And the fact that we had to be AB 540, like, that was like our name and last name, for them to know how to serve us. And even then, they were just, at many instances, they were like, well, we're gonna check in and get back to you. Come back at whatever time. We wanted to change that. We didn't want people to feel that way. We wanted people to feel accepted and welcome. And I think that was one of the first things, like, how do we get the word out on campus? How do we have admin push these protocols in place, put them in place so that more people feel welcome? Because we were probably I think we were probably the first wave of students to come in under 8540. I don't know, there might have been more, but it felt like it was us, like we were there and they needed to serve us and they didn't know how. And I think that pushed us into creating the roles. So when we had the roles, like, I remember the historian, Teixeira had given us a little bit of information of how a historian can collect, document things that we're doing so that we can push things forward. And liaisons, like, your jobs was to go and seek support from other organizations, some other groups. And they did. They did. I was more on the quiet side. I joked around and I felt welcome, but I was more on the quiet side. I had input when it was meeting time, but I didn't feel ready to take on this role. And I think it always has been, because it's too personal. Even right now meeting with you, I saw it as a challenge. This friend passed away. So,
Sorry about that.
yeah. I was like, I need to go talk now. Like, this is what I can do now.
I'm so sorry about that. Am sorry. And thank you for sharing your memories with me, with the project, with other folks, because you're not the only one, right? We are not the only ones who are going through this, and the same things that are happening to you, that had happened to you, are happening to other folks. So I think
Yeah.
it's very important for us to share our story and let it know that, like how you felt once, you're not alone, and there are more out there than you. You know, it takes a lot of courage to find resources to disclose who you are, essentially, right? Because as you figure it out who you are, you're also trying to disclose it to other folks so that they could help you with it, right? Yeah, but thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing that. And if you feel comfortable, we can stop for today.